the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what the hell it's talking about, and we're very happy to be with you. We go places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot. And we deal with the issues of the day the way we deal with the issues of the day. This is not particularly a political show. I do have points of view, but they're not going to fall down. I'm sure you've heard other talk show hosts say that, you know, Bud?
Yeah, there's always a talk show host that go, not like any other talk show you ever heard.
Yeah, most of the guys that say they're not like any other talk show you've ever heard, they're all conservatives. So,
that's true.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about, you know, if ever you hear a guy say, this is a different kind of show, they're conservatives. If you hear someone say that it's not a different kind of show, it's like every other show you've ever heard in your life, they're conservatives. If you've heard people say that occasionally they like to give an opinion, but most of the time they're just there to have fun, they're conservatives. If you hear a show...
All right, you get it.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. I don't want the mammogram story. I want the story. This is a story that is, as I was saying during our pre-show, that breaks all records. Maybe it doesn't break all records, but it certainly is tying a lot of records for just low-life behavior. A woman that kept other people prisoner in the cellar of her home in Philadelphia. I think this woman has, if I'm not mistaken, I think she's been arrested and has been charged with any number of different crimes. Where is that story, Bud? We're going to have Margaret Gray on the line with us in a moment. We're going to talk about that as it pertains to the economy. Here it is. Woman who held four in Philadelphia cellar may have victimized dozens, according to police. The woman charged with keeping four adults with mental disabilities locked in a squalid Tacony basement. I guess this is a part of Philadelphia. And I don't really have to get it right because we're not on in Philadelphia. So, you know, that's one of the pluses of not being on in Philadelphia. We can just butcher the names of their neighborhoods. Not that I want to do that, but what the hell difference does it make, right? Okay.
The people listen who come from Philadelphia.
Then I apologize to those people. I'm doing the best I can. With a squalid Tacony basement while collecting their Social Security checks may have victimized dozens of others, police said on Monday. When Linda Ann Weston was arrested on Sunday, she had identification records for as many as 50 people in her possession, including power of attorney paperwork, forms of identification, and Social Security numbers, according to Police Lieutenant Ray Evers. The documents suggest Weston has been running a wide-ranging fraud operation. He said, and I'm quoting, she might have been doing this for years, probably since she got out of prison. Margaret, you're familiar with this story and other stories like this, this reminds me an awful lot of that guy in Vienna. It reminds me an awful lot of that Garrido, although this does seem to be more economically driven.
Well, Phil, and that is the bottom line on this. It is economically driven. It is an economic crime in many ways, and I think we need to focus on that. We have to take a look at a much bigger picture when you see a woman who is living in Philadelphia, most likely a woman who is single, most likely a woman who is a single mother. I don't know, but the statistics will prove that, I'm sure, that she's a single mother. I'm sure that we will look deeper into this case, and we'll find out that she's not only a single mother, but that the husband or the father of those children is most likely still alive somewhere, and not paying his fair share for those children. So I think when we look into the case of this Weston, we're going to see a lot more than we bargained for. We're going to see a woman who has violated the law in a very extreme way. Given the times that we live in, given the kinds of people that we are seeing now, Phil, more than ever before, we are seeing very aberrant and very extreme crimes. But we are also seeing... We're seeing crimes that have been committed out of necessity, I think. And in the case of this woman, Linda Ann Weston, that, I think, when all the facts are in, is what we're going to be looking at.
Well, you're saying we're going to be looking at a woman who has committed these crimes out of necessity?
No, I'm not saying out of necessity so much as out of the tragedy of her life and the tragedy of the... modern life in America right now. let's look at our country as it exists today in the year 2011. I've heard people say it, and I'm sure you've heard it as well. Our country has never really been worse off. Yes, I know we had a Great Depression, but have we ever seen the kinds of despair that we see today? Have we ever seen the kinds of a despondency, the kind of the lack of community that we have today in this country? Have we ever seen this before? I don't think we have. When Linda Ann Weston began to keep these people as prisoners, I am sure that it's very likely she was a normal woman who was at her wit's end as to how to survive. And we've all found ourselves there, Phil.
Well, not to interrupt you, but that's exactly the point. We have all found ourselves there. And we haven't all begun to, keep prisoners.
But Phil, hold on for a minute because I know what you're going to say. And I appreciate your opinion, but a lot of what you're going to say is predictable. A lot of what other people would say is very predictable. I'm looking at this differently. I'm looking at this from the eyes of someone who has lived in this country, saw Barack Obama become President of the United States during a year that the worst possible economy, perhaps in history, befell this country. And all of a sudden, we had a situation that none of us had ever expected. How are we going to make a living? How are we going to live? Linda Ann Weston, I'm sure, like a lot of us, was a normal woman making ends meet, having a career, having children, and enjoying her life. Suddenly, as the result of 8 years of George Bush's policies, this is a woman that is forced into doing things she never in her life dreamt. She never in her life ever dreamt possible. She never in her life, I'm sure, Phil, dreamt that she would have to keep people as prisoners, if you can imagine this.
Margaret, I've got to interrupt you because I'm hearing you say some things. You're saying that as the result of George Bush's policies. Now, here is a very, you talked about predictability. Isn't that a predictable line of discussion?
What is?
To blame this woman's situation on George Bush.
No, I did not do that. I said, as the result of policies in the Bush administration, the economy went south, to coin a phrase. And when the economy went south, so did a lot of jobs and so did a lot of lives. And what is left? I'll tell you what is left. What is left is this woman and millions of others like her trying to make a living, trying to figure out how to make a living. How to exist, how to survive, and how to move on. And in her case, she was forced into this act of depravity, which was to keep people prisoner and to cash their Social Security checks. If you were to interview this woman right now...
You're saying that she was forced...
If you were to interview this woman right now, I'm sure she would tell you that she never anticipated in a million years having to do something like this.
Margaret, she has kept people prisoner, though, has been cashing their checks.
I understand that. You're not telling me anything I don't know. I know that.
All right. You don't call that theft?
Yes, I do call it theft, but I don't blame her for it. It is a wholesale theft that has been committed by the society in general. And it's a very difficult, I understand it's a difficult concept to understand, Phil. And I will tell you this, Phil, of all the people that I know that you don't have a college education. I know that you did not get a degree from university. You're a very intelligent man. You're one of the most intelligent people I know, Phil, in fact, having never been to college. But there are some things that you really don't have an understanding of, and this is one of them.
Well, what am I not understanding? If this woman, Linda Ann Weston, took identifications and records and so forth from as many as 50 people in her possession, she took power of attorney paperwork, forms of identification, Social Security numbers, etc., and she was keeping, at the time that she was arrested, 4 adults with mental disabilities locked in the basement. What about that is not criminal?
I did not say it wasn't criminal.
But I'm hearing you... there's something about what you're saying here, and I don't think I'm alone in hearing this. There's something about you saying that is that it sounds like you're giving her a pass.
No, I'm not so much giving her a pass, Phil, as I'm saying to her, I'm looking at her as another woman. And this is what I mean. You are a very intelligent man, Phil, but you don't have a college education. And the other thing is, you are not a female. You don't know what it's like to be a woman in an economy like this. You just don't know what it's like to be an individual that has 4 or 5 children.
Do we know how many children she has?
I don't have the story in front of me, Frank. If you have it, I'm sure that when the news comes out, we're going to find out that she's got something like 4 or 5 children and a husband that isn't around. Most likely a live-in boyfriend who fathered these children, and now he's gone. So I'm looking at her as another woman, and I'm saying to her, I get it. I understand. And there are times, Phil, that this kind of thing...
All right, so you're telling me there are times that a woman needs to kidnap 4 people, lock them in her basement, and take their Social Security numbers.
I am not putting it like that.
Isn't that what she did?
I am saying there are times when a woman has to be proactive so she can survive, so her children can survive.
But can you not say that there are times when a woman... You're saying that this woman kidnapping people is okay.
I'm not saying that she did kidnap people.
Are you disputing the facts of this case?
Well, if you're asking me, am I disputing what the police said? No, I am not. But I will not use the word kidnap. I will not use that word. I am going to show a little more understanding of what this woman was up against.
All right, our number is, you know what? Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. What was this woman up against? She's charged with keeping 4 adults with mental disabilities locked in a basement while collecting their Social Security checks and their identification records and their Social Security numbers, etc. This woman held people captive and used their personal information to enrich herself. Is this woman, not these people she held captive, this woman, Ms. Weston, an object of our pity? 877-876-PHIL. You're listening to the world-famous... Phil Henry Show.
The world famous Phil Henry Show.
Woo! I like the way you blocked that out.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL is the number, 877-876-7445. We have Margaret Gray on the line with us. We're going to get back to her in just a moment. Margaret, hold the line. I just want to let everybody know that we're online in streaming video. Our Phil TV and HD video cast is online right now at philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. By the way, forthcoming tonight, we will give you details on how you can win 1 free month. Of Phil. 1 free month of Phil. We'll give you the details coming up tonight, so you can win a free month of viewing and listening to our archives and enjoying everything about our website that we possibly will allow you to. No, it's you will. You'll have 1 free month of enjoying our website. We'll give you the details of that as we progress this evening. Margaret Gray, who is the author of A Little Bird Told Me, which is a nationally syndicated newspaper column. What do I got there, man? That sounds wicked. I think we just turned on iTunes. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. Margaret, are you there?
Yes, I thought I heard the first guitar strums of...
Indigo Girls.
Yes, the Indigo Girls.
We had our iTunes. It's one of the things that we forget to turn off here. Is iTunes that we roll during our pre-show. Anyway, welcome back, Margaret.
Thank you. And Phil, again, I appreciate you having me on the program. I think it's very important that we are able to educate people to a few realities. I think it's very, very, I don't know how you put it, I think it's tabloidy to say, well, a woman kept people prisoner in her basement, and a woman was stealing their identification, and a woman was this and that.
All right, I mean, I can agree with you on all of that, but would you agree that a crime has been committed?
I'm not going to agree just yet that a crime has been committed, and I'll tell you why.
You don't think a crime has been committed. You don't think that when a woman holds people hostage in a basement, as this woman, Linda Ann Weston, did, that's not a crime?
I think you have to take it case by case, Phil. And I really do think we have to calm down when we look at these stories. First of all, this is a woman who most likely has a lot of children and some deadbeat man somewhere who has decided he's not going to pay for those children. Secondly, she is a woman, and that takes this to a different level. We are living, Phil, and I'm sorry.
Well, you're going to say now that there's two separate kinds of justice, one for men.
No, I'm not going to say there's two separate kinds of justice. I am going to say that we need to understand the reality of being a woman. And we have not done that, I don't think, in the history of jurisprudence. You know, it's a very interesting. We are just now beginning to recognize that some women, Phil, and God forgive me for saying this, but I really believe it, some women have every right in the world to shoot and kill their husbands for the abuse that they're put through.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
You would not disagree with that?
No, I would not disagree with that.
So you would agree that a woman has every right in the world to shoot and kill a man who is abusing her?
I think that if the authorities have not been able to stop this, if the restraining orders haven't stopped it, if the shelter for abused women can't protect them, and most of the time they can't, then I think you got to do what you got to do, without question.
All right, you got to do what you got to do. Let's keep that in mind. Because now I'm going to tell you about a woman who lives in Philadelphia who has no money, who is this close to going out on the street. And you know what that means. Going out onto the street and selling it like a whore. And the word is as ugly to me as it is to you, Phil. But it seems that that's what we want women to do. We like to see them go out and have to whore it up.
And why would you say that we like that? Why is that? Why?
Because this woman has no choice but to either whore it up or to keep these people captive, yes, and use their money. And
so she's got no choice. Either she's going to go out and be a whore, or she has to steal from people.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're both illegal. Now, who is she stealing from? Phil, she's stealing from people that are mentally disturbed. And may God forgive me for saying this. They are mentally disturbed people. They deserve all of our Christian charity. But they are, for all intents and purposes, non-people. And by that, I don't mean that they don't have people that love them, and they don't have names, and they don't have lives. But they're non-people from the standpoint of what are they, what good are they going to do anyone in terms of the greater good of society? So,
you know, that sounds very heartless. And
well, Phil, you know, you can have the Padre punch your ticket on the way out. You know what I mean?
This is not me trying to have the Padre punch my ticket. I'm telling you, it sounds very heartless, okay?
Does it sound heartless to send a woman out onto the streets so she can stick it out there into someone's face and whore it up? And I'm sorry to have to put it that way, Phil, but that's what you're forcing me into. Is it charitable for us to force a woman out onto the streets so she can lift her skirt up above her waist, stick it out in traffic, and say, here, want to buy it? I think it is absolutely the lowest society possible to ask a woman to do that. So what did she do instead? She took the Social Security money of individuals that are mentally retarded. What are they going to spend it on? Except ridiculous. I don't know what the mentally retarded are going to spend their money on.
Well, the money is spent by people that are caretaking them, that can help them.
Well, this woman can do that, Phil. And she can do a lot more. She can spend that money on those mentally retarded people, and she can buy things that people use. She's not going to go out and spend it the way someone who has those problems will spend it.
How is someone who has those, the money that the mentally disturbed or mentally retarded or whatever you want to call it, emotionally disturbed, mental disabilities, the money, the things that those people buy is what they buy after the money has been used by others who are their caretakers to take care of them.
If you want to give that money to people with mental disabilities and have them and go out and buy a Pez dispenser and a bicycle pump, and you, Phil, you know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. No, I don't.
They buy ridiculous things. You give that money to a woman who has her mental faculties, and she'll buy things that benefit this society and herself and her five children that have been abandoned. Think about it, Phil.
All right, Margaret Gray, I'm thinking, and we'll be back. Margaret Gray on the line with us. This woman that held four people captive in a Philadelphia basement, maybe she had the right because she needed that money and would spend it on better things than these people. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
My God, think about it, Phil.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And for those of you who are watching on Phil TV in HD, right behind me is a blow-up of our one of our best-of CDs. And if you are not watching on HD, Phil TV in HD, we still have best-of CDs for sale on our website, and you don't have to have a backstage pass to buy one, man. You can just go into our shop and buy whatever you want there. While you're there, you can buy a backstage pass if you like, but you don't have to. And as I mentioned later on in the show, we're going to most likely later on the show describe or give you the lowdown on how you can get a free month of the Phil Hendry website, a free month coming up on our program tonight. All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. On the line briefly here with us this evening is Margaret Gray, and we've been talking with her about a terrible situation in Philadelphia, in my opinion, where a woman was arrested keeping four people as captives in the basement of her house, and these four people with mental disabilities had their Social Security checks taken from them, their IDs taken from them, all kinds of things taken from them so that this woman could cash in on these people being held captive. And Margaret, you are on my program here tonight. You are, apologizing for this woman.
Let me jump in and help you out because I can hear you. I can hear you stammering through this.
No, I'm not stammering. I know exactly what I'm saying. I'm just trying to find the first word out of my mouth, which is you're an apologist for a woman who's breaking the law. And you're using her gender because she's a woman to excuse it.
No, Phil, I don't believe I came on your program tonight and said because she's a woman and began some kind of ridiculous pity party for this lady. I'm looking at the facts straight on, and I'm asking myself, yes, these people have disabilities. Yes, these people have problems, but so does she. Look at the economy that we're living in. Look at the mess that Wall Street, yes, has made of our economy. You want to know why people are putting on demonstrations like Occupy Wall Street? Because there are people that are suffering, Phil. And one of those people that's suffering is this Lucy Weston Linda Ann Weston is her name. And
her name is Linda Ann Weston, yes.
Yes. A woman who, in my opinion, probably has five or six kids.
You're saying, in my opinion, do we know how many children this woman has?
I don't think there's any doubt that she has five or six kids.
Do we know for a fact, Bud? Is there anything in the story?
I didn't see anything.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. If he hasn't seen anything, I don't know what you mean.
All right, well, if you're saying she has five or six kids, it sounds to me like you're sort of padding the evidence of this, or padding the biography of this woman. The other thing you said...
I'm not padding anything, all right, honey, and I could make a joke here. Let me just say, Margaret Gray has never had to pad anything to make a joke. But let me be serious for a moment, all right?
Let's be serious. This woman was keeping hostages, and we've heard stories like this.
Before the break, I said people with mental disabilities are people that have money coming to them, and what are they doing with it? What are they doing with the money that comes to them? You know that I've had, and Frank, if Bobby, bring Bobby in for a moment. You know that I've had Bobby, who was that young man that Vernon Dozier introduced us to.
And that was the kid that they were going to work with the TSA?
Well, it was before the TSA. Bobby was the young man. Here he is. Here. All right, hold on. Bobby has a mental disability. He is 37 years of age. Now, you go ahead, Phil, and you ask Bobby, what's he going to do with all of his money that he gets from the government?
Well, who is getting his money?
He's got a caretaker, Phil.
We're not keeping him here. He's visiting Frank. He's looking at some of the legal papers that Frank has. He likes to talk to Frank about television.
All right. So, but who is getting his money?
He has a guardian, I believe, right? He has an uncle. But I wanted you to talk to this young man, and you tell me whether he knows what to do with the monies that he gets every month from the trust fund, from the government. And don't you think a woman like this woman Weston would know much, much better how to spend that money?
No, I do not think. I don't even have to talk to Bobby. I do not think that Bobby, hold on, Bobby. I do not think that that she would know better. I think that people that love this young man, people that care about his life and care about where his life is going and how to take care of him, they would know better.
Well, all right, Phil, that sounds very, very pretty. But what if there isn't anyone that, hold on just a minute. Bobby, come here for a minute.
Hi.
Hi, Bobby. Phil, what I'm going to say is going to be a little shocking, but we've had to teach him this. What are these, Bobby? I'm asking Bobby, what are my breasts? What are these?
Your breasts.
Are you allowed to touch them?
No.
All right. And what happens if you touch them?
I get the fork.
You get the fork. And
what is the fork?
Hold on for a minute, Phil. I just want to... What is this?
That's your private.
And
Margaret, I think I get the idea. Is this what you're teaching this young man?
I beg your pardon?
What is everything that you're teaching this young man have to do with not touching a woman and her private?
How dare you? I said, what are these? And he said, breasts. That's not my private. This is, right, Bobby?
Yeah.
All right, and what's this?
Hold on for a minute. You know something? I'm really getting angry.
In what way are you getting angry?
What is she saying?
He says he's getting... What are you getting angry at?
I don't like the way you're talking to that kid and what you're teaching him.
Kid, he's 38, for God's sake.
All right, he's 38. He has the mind of a child. Okay? And you... What is the fork, by the way?
What is the fork? The fork is aversion therapy that we have in association with Dr. Suffolk that Herb Sewell had put us in contact with. And
Dr. Suffolk, that Herb Sewell put you in contact with. You mean a guy that worked up at the Atascadero?
Would you stop yelling at me, please?
The guy that worked up at Atascadero?
Yes. Bill, hold on.
That to me is just outrageous. Just outrageous.
Oh, give it a rest. Bill, hold on. Bobby, if you touched that, what would happen?
I get the fork.
Go ahead and touch it.
No.
Go ahead.
Don't tell him to touch it because I know what you're going to do.
Well, how else do I give him the fork unless he touches it?
I don't want you to give him the fork. Why would you give him? And what is the fork?
The fork is simply put a fork in a wall socket.
Yeah, then he grabs the other end of it. Don't grab this, Bobby. Grab the other end of it. Like this, see? What would you do, Bobby, what would you do if you grabbed the other end of this? All right. You know what I'm saying? Right there. Yeah. Yeah, see?
What did you just do?
Well, what did it sound like? Three guesses.
Yeah, the first two don't count.
What did they do to you, Bobby?
I got the fork.
So here's what we got. You and your husband and Bobby, you are advocating on behalf of this Weston.
No, you're making a very big dramatic scene out of nothing. We brought this boy into our home to teach him things about the normal way that people live, Phil. And we brought him into our home to teach him things about Frank's business. And I told him that if you touch this, you get the fork. And Bobby knows that. And
so for our edification and your personal kicks, you're giving him the fork.
No, that's a tape recording. I had no reason to give him a fork.
You had no reason to give him... What do you mean a tape recording?
We taped the different fork sessions we've given him. He didn't do anything wrong tonight, did you, Bobby?
No, I didn't do nothing wrong.
All right. So I pretended like I gave him the fork. Woo-hoo! That was a tape. When's that from?
That was May.
Yeah, that was last May.
So, all right, thanks very much for your education here. 877-876-PHIL. God, I feel like I'm in some kind of a weird, I don't know what, man.
Yeah, it's kind of like being Alice in, you know, Alice in Lullaby Land or something.
Yeah, Alice in Birdland. Alice in Birdland?
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, that's it. Well, whatever it is, yeah, it's like through the looking glass, man, we go, which is what we promise people will do anyway. Margaret Gray, we're talking about this woman, Linda Ann Weston, in Philadelphia. This woman was found with four people in a cellar, and she wasn't found with them. She was keeping them captive. She was cashing their Social Security checks. She was using their personal identification for her own nefarious aims. And I'm listening to at least one person here tonight, Ms. Gray, saying that as a woman, she has no choice, otherwise she's sticking it out into traffic and saying, do you want to buy it? God.
Yeah, I don't understand what you mean by that.
Well, three guesses, as they say, and the first two don't count. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Do you think women have it so bad in our society that if they steal, if they use other people's identities, if they use other people's checks, they can be forgiven because life has always been tough for women? Because that's what you're saying, Margaret, and, you know, it seems like a real apologist thing.
No, I didn't say that.
Yeah, all right. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show. We're wrapping up here with Margaret Gray. We also have Frank Gray on the line. I don't, even if you're playing recordings of putting that boy through that kind of as you call it, aversion therapy, Ms. Gray, I think that is really, really low.
Have you ever taken care of...
Margaret.
No, hold on for a minute there, Mr. Henry. Because you have accused me of some very, very, I think, some base and violent and cruel things. Have you ever taken care of someone with a mental disability? Yes or no?
What I know it...
Have you ever taken care of?
What'd she say?
She hasn't... He hasn't answered yet.
I haven't. No, I have not.
No, you have not. No, you have not. When you bring someone into your home with a mental disability, Phil, as Frank and I brought Bobby into our home, lo, these many years ago, he doesn't live here. He lives with his uncle. They have a very beautiful home out in South Pasadena. But Bobby, we brought into our home because we wanted to know him. We got to know him through your show. Bobby gets disability checks. Bobby gets checks from the Social Security Administration. Bobby gets all kinds of checks, okay? Do you give him the money and let him go out and buy volleyballs and then cardboard boxes? And, you know, I gave him, I don't know if you know this, Frank, I gave Bobby $30.
Yes, you do. If that's what he wants to spend his money on, yes.
I gave that boy 30, and I say boy, he's 37 years old. I gave him $30 one day. He came back with a Pez dispenser. Two T-shirts that didn't fit him, and he bought, put up money down, or he bought a brochure for a timeshare in Hawaii. Are you listening to me?
And all right, so...
What the timeshare? That's the stupidest thing I've ever...
But it doesn't get dumber than that, Phil. A timeshare and...
He got a brochure, you said.
He came back with... He purchased a seminar on how to get a timeshare in Hawaii, a Pez dispenser, an inner tube, and a T-shirt that was too small for him that said, I saw Carlsbad Caverns.
Yeah, that's the dumbest thing.
Can you imagine someone that stupid?
The boy has, as you say, the boy, the young man, the man, has mental disabilities.
Exactly. That's the point I'm trying to make.
That doesn't mean you take his money from him just because he's not buying what you think he ought to buy. Most of that money goes to his guardian. Most of that money goes to his well-being, his upkeep, his clothing, his food, the roof over his head, whatever. So he gets some discretionary money. So you know what? Just because he goes out and he buys things that you don't think he should, what do you spend your spare money on?
Are you kidding? Are you trying to insult me? I don't go out and buy. I don't go out and buy that. You know that candy dust, whatever that stuff is, Frank. What is that?
Yeah, that fizzy stuff.
That fizzy stuff, so your tongue turns green. I don't go out and do that. He buys that every day. A 37-year-old man comes back here with a green tongue, and then he goes out.
So he goes and he buys candy. I'd buy candy too.
Yeah, you'd buy candy too if you had an IQ of 41.
Yeah, that's worth saying.
You know, Frank, Margaret, I can understand. You, I'm shocked that you can't...
What do you mean you're shocked? She came over to the house, and...
And what do you mean she? Why don't you get him fixed, will you?
He has gender confusion.
I know he's got gender confusion. Every time he calls the show, every guy is a she and every she is a he.
What's she talking about?
Go ahead, Frank.
No. Hey, Frank. Frank.
Yeah, that's my name. Don't wear it out.
Oh, okay. Hey, Frank, do you know that when you refer to a woman, you call her a he?
I don't understand.
Well, you're going to understand. That gonorrhea that you claim you got, man, that went into your brain?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's rotted your brain out so much you don't know how to say genders properly.
God, you sound like a tard. You're really embarrassing yourself.
And watch that tard stuff, too, if you don't mind. Do you know that, Frank?
Who called who a tard?
Don't worry about that. Do you know that when you talk about Bobby, you call Bobby a her, it's a he?
I'm talking about Bobby, yes. That's the young man that comes to visit us.
Yeah.
What about her?
That's what I mean, you idiot. Her.
I don't know.
Bill, it's impossible for him to understand what you're saying. He thinks what he's saying is normal. You see, I told you. Bill, you don't mess with the big dog. I'm the big dog, okay? You can't eat where I eat. You can stand where I, you know what, but you can't eat where I eat.
And, oh, okay, big dog.
Yeah, and here's one more thing the big dog's got to say. Okay? Don't stand under the big dog's you know what when the big dog's ready to let one go. Because, well, I forget what I was going to say, but the point is...
Yeah, thanks a lot. You make me feel mighty real, man. Tell you what. Margaret Gray and...
Are you all done with him?
I'm all done with him, yeah. I'm not going to listen to her bull crap. You know what she's doing now? Is she's just making stuff up.
Yo, she's going to call back.
Well, that's another thing, you guys. Just because somebody calls back doesn't mean you have to put them back on the air. Do you understand that?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you hung up on her.
Doesn't make any difference if I hung up on her. It doesn't make any difference at all if I hung up on her. You understand that, Robert? Doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Okay. So if I hang up on them and they call back and they go, oh, Phil hung up on me, I want to get back on the air. That doesn't mean that you have to put them back on the air. Do you understand that, Robert?
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay, Bud, do you?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
It means if they call up, then I didn't have to put it back on the air.
If they call back...
If they call back, I don't have to put them back on the air.
That's right. If they call back, you don't have to put them back on the air.
Another thing, Phil, I would...
What are they doing back on the air?
They called back before you said what you said about not putting them on the air when they call back.
I don't like being hung up on, Phil. I've never liked being hung up on. I have never liked it. I called up, Phil, because I wanted to sing a song for you. Because this is how you make me feel. And if you were any kind of a man, you'd be singing this song, too. I remember this one, Phil, from the pre-show?
Oh, yeah.
Red roses for a blue lady. Mr. Flores, please take my order soon. La-da. You see what I mean?
Yeah, well, Margaret, none of your singing is going to get you off the hook on the way that you've been talking about these poor disabled people. The way you talked about that poor disabled Bobby. And as long as you brought it up, ladies and gentlemen, Margaret thinks that the lyric is Mr. Flores. It's Mr. Florist.
No, it is not. God, you're stupid. It's Mr. Flores. The song, Phil, was a groundbreaker for Hispanics in popular music. I want some red roses for a blue lady, Mr. Flores. You don't know that lyric.
No, I don't know that lyric because it doesn't exist.
It does. Mr. Flores, take my... I want a red rose for a blue lady. Mr. Flores, or Mr. I guess Mr. Flores was working that day.
No, Frank, it's got nothing to do with who was working that day. God almighty. You know, Phil's right. You really need some more penicillin. I'm talking about the song...
I know what you're talking about, and you're wrong. It's Mr. Florist, not Mr. Flores.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I like to give it a little bit of a color, and if you were any kind of a man, Phil, you would send me a bright bouquet of red roses for a blue lady. Mr. Forrest, take my order, please. Oh, God, it shorted the phone out. I've never had that happen before, Phil. That my voice was so screeching and unbearable, I got sparks from the phone. Isn't that fascinating? Oh, my God.
All right. Well, Margaret, thank you for joining us. Thank you for calling back. I didn't want to put you back on the air, but I guess you are back on the air, and you were able to get your point out about Mr. Flores.
That's exactly right. It's not Mr. Flores, it's Mr. Flores, but I guess you don't care about Hispanics.
That's right. Not so much that I'm going to make stuff up, Mr. Flores. All right, the world-famous Phil Henry Show comes back next hour. We are going to have a very special guest with us, a guy by the name of Ken Gawa. And Mr. Gawa will be talking with us about Facebook, Twitter, and other social media sites. Should we expect privacy anywhere in our lives these days? We'll be back. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Mr. Flores.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Hey, welcome back. We just opened up the window behind us. There is the beautiful El Pacifico. If you're watching us on Phil TV in HD, and welcome back to our show, the Phil Henry Show, all over the planet Earth. Let's just put it that way, man. We are live online. We're on our wonderful network of radio stations. We're in, you know, possibly, if you hear voices in your teeth, sure, it could be me. You don't necessarily have to be schizophrenic. I could very well be communicating to you through some sort of a copper plate that the CIA put in your skull one night when you were asleep and you didn't know it. Don't let them talk you into thinking you're nuts. No, 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 no. The world-famous Phil Henry Show is, in fact, everywhere. Now, I want to tell you about something. Coming up very soon, we are going to ask you to do something. And if you want to practice, you can. If you want to practice, you can. But we're going to keep track of all of our Facebook likes, and we're going to keep track of all of our Twitter hashtags. And we're going to keep track, and when I say keep track of the hashtags, we're going to keep track of the people that are making them. And we're going to keep track of all the people that are liking our Phil Henry fan page on Facebook. Okay? And then we're going to put them into a random drawing, and once a month, or however many times, yeah, I guess once a month, we're going to draw a name and you'll get a free month of listening on the Phil Henry Show website. Is that a beautiful thing? Is that worth the price of admission? Is that worth your time, your effort, and the pain and the agony of getting out of bed in the morning? Yes!
I think it is.
Exactly. So stick around. We will officially drop the handkerchief on this probably tomorrow night, and I'll let you know all. I'll let you know exactly what to hashtag, because this is a very specific thing I want you to hashtag. And then we're going to very specifically tell you what to do over on the Facebook fan page, okay? So that's starting tomorrow night here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Please do join us. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And joining us now from Lincoln's in Laguna Beach is Ken Gawa, Mr. Gawa, or Kawa, excuse me, C-O-W-A.
C-O-W-A is one way that the family name has spelled it, Phil.
All right, Ken, you are with Sixth Estate. Tell us about that.
I certainly would be happy to. Sixth Estate is a public service organization that is designed to protect the American consumer and the individual American from intrusion by the federal government into their lives, into their businesses, into the lives of family members, into their private communications, emails, telephone calls, cell phone calls, mail, you name it, Phil. Sixth Estate, if you will, is a watchdog group that is a step beyond the Fifth Estate, because we do things that the professional press has stopped doing, and that is protecting the individual's right to privacy. The press at one time was there to protect us from government intrusion and government restriction on our speech, government restriction on our information. The press doesn't do that anymore. So we need to rely on ourselves. That's what Sixth Estate is about.
All right, but Sixth Estate is not about the press.
No, sir, it's not.
It is about privacy.
Sixth Estate is about privacy, and it is about there are a great many people right now who want to shut down things like Facebook, and they want to shut down things like Twitter because they feel that Twitter and Facebook are an intrusion on the privacy and an intrusion on the private communications of people. If you have a Facebook page, if you have a Twitter page, there's an awful lot the government or any private individual who wants to do the digging can find out about. We are forced into, and this is what we've come to. So many people are going out and doing what they can do to connect with people. And that's why Facebook and Twitter are essential. I don't see them in our organization. Hold on. God. Oh.
Gesundheit.
Oh, thank you, Phil.
God.
Oh. I could be coming down with something. I've got an allergy. We don't believe in government intrusion. We don't believe in government inflicting itself and compromising our privacy. We don't believe that the government should in any way do that, and the Constitution guarantees that. Facebook and Twitter are different. Facebook and Twitter need to remain open and viable, even though they do risk, they do pose a risk and a threat to our privacy.
All right, let's take this one step at a time. Facebook and Twitter, in your opinion?
In our opinion, and the opinion of Sixth Estate, and I think it's been proven over and over again, that Facebook, Twitter, and other social networking sites such as Google+, we've seen this with Google Buzz, we've seen it with MySpace, BlackBerry Buzz, these are social media sites that can and will compromise your privacy and take your information and disseminate it to government agencies, to private companies, to public agencies, and so forth. We stand four square against that.
All right. If you stand four square against that, why do you not stand against Facebook and Twitter?
All right. And that's a very good question, and this is why we want to be very clear. We don't stand against Facebook, Twitter, or Google Buzz, or Google Plus, because these sites represent something very potent. They represent the ability of average people to connect with each other and to engage each other at times in intimate ways, at times in friendly ways. But the value of being able to connect with another human being on that level is so valuable that we cannot stand against that. And so we have said to people that are on our mailing list, and we've said to others, it's worth it to run the risk of having the government take your private information if you can be on a social media site, a social networking site, and meet a woman or a man that you can then interact with in a very exciting way.
And all right, so
it's a level of honesty, Phil, I don't think people are used to having.
You're saying that the government is going to the government is.
Let me put it another way, okay?
Go ahead.
I don't believe, and no one in America today wants to give up their right to privacy. No one in America today wants to give up any one of their precious rights under the Constitution of the United States, the Fifth Amendment, the right to keep one's personal effects and private papers private. This is a part of our Constitution, and yet we are recognizing more and more that people are willing to compromise their right to privacy if it means they can meet and interact with an exciting person on Facebook or Twitter with the possibility of a sexual, and I'll say it very clearly, sexual connection. If not sexual, one of friendship, but one that is of a very intimate or close to an intimate nature.
And so people are willing to give up their constitutional rights for sex?
people are willing to give. I think you put it the wrong way. I think you should say this. I think you should say, naturally, when it comes to intimacy, sex, the interaction of two human beings sexually, naturally, we are going to push constitutional rights and legal matters and thus to the back burner.
Why would you say naturally? That seems a little...
I don't think there's any doubt, because if you... I've been involved in debates on this topic for the last 2 years, and every time I sit down in a seminar with people to discuss the Constitution and the rights of the individual, every time they bring up Facebook or Twitter, people begin to back off. They don't want to talk about shutting those sites down. They don't want to talk about monitoring those sites. They don't want to talk about limiting the access those sites have to private material. And I believe it's because the very people who are involved in this issue with me and are activists along with me, those people, they're human. And they get on Facebook and they get on Twitter and they meet a woman or they meet a man and they have a passing sexual or intimate relationship with them, and it's exciting for them.
And so in other words, so it is true, sex trumps constitutionality.
No, it doesn't trump it so much as it is the intelligent decision, it's the intellectual decision that we've made.
You know, it almost sounds as if when you talk about this, that you're trying to sort of use reverse psychology. You know what I mean?
No, I don't.
It sounds like you're saying, oh, okay, well, as long as you don't really like your constitutional rights as much as you like to go out and have sex, well, we understand that. And there's nothing we can do about it. So, yeah, go ahead and go on Facebook and go on Twitter and have a ball.
Well, you know, it's not a bad point of view that you're... It's not a bad view that you're taking there, Phil. And I guess if I were you, I might think something like that. But there really isn't anything we can do. There isn't anything that I can do to convince the average American that it is not smart for them to be on Facebook or on Twitter, even though they're trying to pick up a woman or hit on a man, because the government of the United States of America could be looking right up their blankety-blank and looking into their lives. I can say that till I'm blue in the face, and no one is going to listen to me. No one's going to care. And as I said, Phil, I've spent 2 years looking into this. I believe it's because the decision has been made. We'll risk having the government know things about us, or having even other entities know things about us, if we can take a shot at intimate sex with a stranger.
Well, you know, I used to say, and I still believe, that sex is the only thing that we risk death over. I mean, people will risk dying just to have a sexual relationship. Hence, people have unprotected sex, you know?
Well, there's something to be said for that, yeah.
And so now you're saying that sex is also something that we will risk compromising our personal security. We will allow even the government or whoever to know our address and know our home phone number and know where we are at all times if it means we can go out and, you know, have sex.
That is true.
How would they know where we are at all times?
Well, on Facebook and on Twitter, you have location. There are location applications.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and you can... and not only that, you only have to use it one time, and that can be tracked forever, so that even if you have the locator turned off, the government or some industrial espionage type of entity can still track you.
It's very interesting stuff. We're going to come back and talk more with Ken Kawa. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and Ken is with Sixth Estate. They're very big on maintaining our constitutional right to privacy. They've been involved in a great many different forums and actions, but there's no defense against it when it comes to Twitter and Facebook, because there's too many people who are on those sites to meet people. And when it comes to that, nobody really cares about their privacy. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back. 877-876-PHIL as we talk about the internet, and we're talking about, really, we're talking about social networking sites with Ken Kawa of Sixth Estate. And it's an interesting conversation, Ken, when we discuss Facebook and Twitter as being, even to you guys who are privacy advocates, Twitter and Facebook have become indispensable.
Yeah, it would appear that, and it would appear that way, I should say, Phil. And the reason I think it appears that way and is simply you can't take the human factor out of anything, and you can't do what people don't want you to do. Privacy, the right to privacy, not having the government having access to your records, not having the government having access to private information. I think most people have probably told themselves a long time ago the government's going to have access to that information anyway, and maybe in their mind the government should have access to that information. But let's take it a step further. What about, as I mentioned before you went to your commercial, what about industrial private companies, private corporations? What about them having access to your private information?
And you think they can do that through Twitter?
Oh, absolutely they can do it through Twitter and Facebook. Of course they can. It's not a problem at all. What about a company that is owned by an individual you may know? What about a company that is owned by a competitor of yours? Do you want him to have your private information? That's what Twitter and Facebook represent. It represents a violation of that privacy, not so much at the level of government as at the level of the private corporation and private company and the private individual. So while Uncle Sam may have your information and you may not have a problem with Uncle Sam, how do you feel about someone that you know or a company you're competing with?
Well, how do you feel about that? Because you said that even in your own organization and in your own area of activism, people who are privacy rights advocates, you can't get too crazy about it because you still want to have that contact with, you know, the social contact through Facebook.
That is very well said, and that's the problem. And that's not just the problem, that's the reality. I asked your listeners, and I asked them the question, are you willing to have your privacy compromised at the level of a private individual, another private individual having your information, or another private corporation or company having your information? Are you willing? And I already know what the answer is. The answer is yes, they are, because that's my answer. And that's the answer.
That's your answer.
That is the, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And that is the answer of a privacy advocate.
Yes, sir, it is. And the reason is that in the year 2005, as I was doing my research on forming Sixth Estate in conjunction with a journalism school in Indiana, and I had finalized my research and was discussing it with a couple of colleagues, I looked at a 15-year marriage that I was involved in and knew that I was really going through the motions with a lot of these things in my life because my wife and I no longer, as much as we love each other and as much as we enjoy being with each other, there wasn't any real significant sexual activity. And I know that I'm probably going a little far here, so just phone me in.
No, it's your life.
Well, there wasn't any significant sexual activity between us that I would call gratifying or exciting or exotic that I enjoyed. My own personal tastes, when it comes to that, it runs to what some would call the exotic. So as I was doing my research for Sixth Estate, I realized that I had a great need in my own personal life for a sex life that was exotic, if you will. And that's when I discovered MySpace. And I knew that as I put my personal information on MySpace and I set up my profile, that much of that information would be accessed someday by private individuals, private companies, or the government, and that I could very well have information get out there that would compromise me for the rest of my life. But when I met a young woman through MySpace, she lived in the city of Orange, in Orange County, California, and we had several dates, and it was, to put it very bluntly, the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I made the decision that I would risk not only disease, but having my private information used by my ex-wife to blackmail me into giving her a larger share of the companies that we owned.
Now, all right, are you hearing what you're saying, though?
Oh, of course I'm hearing what I'm saying. I've said this to myself. I've said this on other shows.
All right, but you're saying as a privacy advocate, as a privacy rights advocate, you willingly used a social media site to meet a young lady risking disease, as you put. I guess that was unprotected sex, too, huh?
It was unprotected sex because it was done without thinking, and I acknowledge that. I'm acknowledging to you, in other words, everything that I've done that was done without any real rationale intelligence until I found out that, of course, we want sex in all of its many permutations, in all of its depravity, as well as its glory. And it doesn't matter if someone is spying on us. It doesn't matter if someone has a camera in the window. We want it, and we're going to have it. And that's when I felt liberated.
Well, do you still consider, you say you feel liberated, that's interesting. Do you still consider yourself a privacy advocate?
Very, very much so, yes.
Except when it comes to these social media sites?
Except when it comes to the social media sites, because I can't be a hypocrite. I won't be a hypocrite. And in order for me to insist on privacy issues being recognized and observed on social media sites, I would have to be a crawling hypocrite, the lowest thing there is, and I refuse to do that. I've committed many, many deviant sexual acts. I refuse to be a crawling hypocrite.
All right, we'll be back with Mr. Ken Kawa on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show as we talk here with Ken Kawa from Sixth Estate. And we talk about privacy, Facebook, Twitter, and the right to privacy. You know, the Tea Party, and I'm going to say this very objectively because I believe that some very intelligent things have been said recently about the Tea Party. I heard them said during Occupy Wall Street. Someone said, you know, the Tea Party is not an anti-Obama party. The Tea Party is an anti-Republican party. The Tea Party was formed more as a reaction to how ineffective and really how philosophically compromised the Republican Party had become. And in a lot of ways, Occupy Wall Street is the same. It is it is reacting to how the Democratic Party has been compromised. But you could even argue that the and this has been argued, and you'd be surprised at how offended a lot of people get, that the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street have more in common than they have opposite each other. What do you think of that?
To the extent that the Tea Party or Occupy Wall Street bill interests me, I would have to say that's probably true. I think we are an unusual organization the same way, that we believe in privacy, and we have an awful lot in common with the Tea Party when it comes to government interference in our lives. We do not want any government interference in our lives. We do not want any interference in our lives, to be honest with you. The compromising of our security, the compromising of our privacy, the compromising of our safety cannot and must not be allowed to stand. And I think it's safe to say, and I don't think this is a extreme comment, it's safe to say that you would lay your life down for that right, because that is our Constitution. And that's why the Facebook and Twitter issue became paramount, because I realized that I will lay my life down for the I will lay my life down to protect my privacy and to protect the rights of my family and my fellow Americans. And I will also use Facebook and Twitter to meet women, to, if I have to, put my private information out there on the internet so that those women can find it and contact me. Now, does that make me a hypocrite? Does that make me an individual that misrepresents my stance? I don't think it does. And
why?
Well, I don't think it does because I'm being very blunt and honest. I'm saying I will give my life for privacy issues, but I am also addicted to the social media sites. I'm addicted to Twitter.
So do you have a Twitter account?
I have a Twitter account, and Sixth Estate has a Twitter account, and we have Facebook page that we invite people to give us their information, their name, address, and so forth, so that we can send them information, their email addresses. And knowing all along, as we ask them for that, that information is going to go to Facebook, which was founded and funded and has been promoted by computer hackers. This man that started Facebook is an admitted hacker. And I find myself not caring so long as I can be on Facebook and make friends with these young students that I've gotten to know. And
the young female students.
Young female students, yes.
You know, the first thing you said as we left the break, or going into the break, was, I don't want to be seen as a hypocrite, you said. I don't mind being involved in the most base and the most exotic and the most depraved sex acts, but please, God, don't make me a hypocrite.
That is correct, yes.
Well, are you not a hypocrite when you say that I believe in privacy issues, but I also am willing to throw my privacy to the wind when it comes to Facebook and Twitter because I want to meet women?
I'm thinking of a good way to approach my answer to that, Phil. No, I do not think I'm a hypocrite because I'm sharing with people the reality that in many ways I am philosophically a failure.
If don't mind me interrupting you, are you a philosophical failure? Do you have the right to lead an organization called Sixth Estate?
That is a good question, and my answer to that would be, until someone comes along that has a vision such as mine, I had the vision that started Sixth Estate, and until someone comes along and has a vision that can carry Sixth Estate into the future, then I don't think that I don't think that I am a hypocrite running the organization. No one else has such a vision as I, that even if they were consistent and believed in privacy to the point that they stayed away from Facebook and they stayed away from Twitter and social network sites, they still wouldn't have enough vision to guide this organization to where it needs to be, and that is securing the privacy of all Americans. Only I have that, even though I am philosophically compromised by...
All right, I want to ask you a question here.
By my membership in Facebook. Go ahead.
All right. I'm someone that wants more information on Sixth Estate. I'm someone that wants more information on privacy rights, not only my privacy when it comes to the government, but yes, my privacy when it comes to private organizations. I find out that you are one of the leading advocates of that, and that, but at the same time, you are, have a private Facebook page. Do you?
Yes, I do.
How many friends do you have?
Oh, I've got probably a couple of thousand, I think, if I looked at it.
You've got 2,000?
Yes, sir, I do. And most of them are female. That's the reason why I'm on Facebook.
Are you still married?
Yes, I am.
You're still married, and you're on Facebook, and you are meeting women.
I am meeting young women, yes, sir. And let me, Phil, I know that this is all very confusing. And,
well, yeah, it's very confusing.
But I wanted you to understand the unique situation that I have myself in. When I started Sixth Estate, I didn't think anyone would be of so much interest that I would attract a following. I wanted my organization to have a following, and I wanted the philosophy of privacy rights to be disseminated, to spread around the country. But I didn't know that I personally would exhibit any magnetism that would cause females to want to friend me on Facebook. So I did not anticipate this.
All right, so you didn't anticipate your own personal attractiveness?
No, I did not. No, I did not.
All right, so when that happened, you suddenly became a fan of Facebook.
Well, I've always been a fan of Facebook. I've never not been a fan of Facebook. What I wasn't a fan of was the fact that the company was founded by hackers, and this Zuckerberg is a hacker. He's an admitted hacker, and his friends are too. And I wasn't a fan of that, and I wasn't a fan of, because they're admitted hackers, they most likely have hacked into every single account on Facebook. And that makes me very angry, and there's nothing I can do about it. I'll let them hack into my account daily if they want to, so long as I can maintain my connection to some of these younger women that I've been able to get phone numbers from and to have a contact with. In ways beyond just as a teacher student.
You were a teacher at one time, right?
No, well, yes, I was. Yes, I was.
All right, so this is you living out a fantasy?
Well, I don't think that's germane to the conversation, but again.
Okay, let me interrupt you again, and I apologize, Ken. We're talking to Ken Cowher, number 877-876-PHIL, and he's saying that even though he believes in privacy rights and privacy issues, etc., Twitter and Facebook have been a boon for you personally, so you're willing to have your privacy compromised because you're meeting a lot of women.
Yes, I am. I'm meeting a lot of women. I know what it sounds like. I know what it sounds like, and I've wrestled with this for a long time. But at the end of the day, I have to say it's worth it. I am a man in his mid-40s, and I met a woman who is 21 years of age, who is a huge fan of Sixth Estate and believes that I am a genius. Well, that was like, you got to understand, I didn't even have to, I said hi, and that's all I needed to do.
Okay, so what? I mean, see, this is what people are going to say.
So what?
Well, wait a minute. People are going to say, here you are, Mr. Privacy, but all of a sudden you're getting laid, and...
I didn't use the word getting laid, sir. And
No, you didn't, but you might as well, okay? Isn't that what we're talking about?
I'm just saying I never used that word. And
all right, but I mean, you're saying that you were Mr. Privacy until you found out that you could go over to Twitter, go over to Facebook, whatever, and meet women and have sex with them, and now maybe you ain't so much of a privacy guy.
I don't think that's the way I'd put it.
Well, how would you put it? How would you put it to make people comfortable that want to join your organization?
To make people comfortable who are joining my organization was I would say to them, ignore what I'm doing. It's got nothing to do with you, and it's none of your business. What Sixth Estate is about is protecting the rights of the individual and the privacy of the individual against government and corporate espionage. And to that end, I advise you to get rid of your Twitter accounts, get rid of your Facebook accounts. And yes, I understand that I have Twitter accounts, and yes, I understand I have Facebook, Phil, and I understand that Sixth Estate has accounts there. But just, I would say to them, get rid of your accounts and just use your email and communication with us, and never mind what I do, because it's none of your business anyway, and it has nothing to do with our larger message.
You don't think that would be off-putting to somebody, say it's none of your business?
I don't know, but you asked me what I would say. It's not come up.
Well, I can guarantee it's going to come up now.
Well, it might.
No, I can guarantee it'll come up now, because people are going to say, hey, I heard you on the radio the other night, and you said that you have a Twitter account, a Facebook account, you're getting laid because of it, but still, people shouldn't do that.
Well, again, I wouldn't put words into people's mouths, Mr. Henry. You don't know what they're going to say. I dare say we may find a large number of people who agree with me and believe in privacy rights, but also think that Facebook's the greatest thing that happened to them since their divorce. So it's tough.
Well, I mean, to me, you sound like a guy that has all these heavy political views. But, hey, ain't Twitter and Facebook fun? Tell you what, hold on for a minute here, Ken. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we talk to Ken Cowher, who is the head of Sixth Estate. And this is an organization that believes in the rights of the individual to privacy. But at the same time, he's got a Facebook page where he meets women. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way, though.
famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL is the world famous Phil Hendry Show phone number, and with me is Ken Kawa at Lincoln's Restaurant in Laguna Beach as we talk about his organization, Sixth Estate, and the fact that they have fought very hard for the rights of individuals to maintain their privacy in the face of increasing corporate as well as government intrusion and infringement. But even as we say that, Ken, you have been talking here this evening about your, you know, use of Facebook, your use of Twitter, and your use of these other social networking or social media sites. And so we, of course, are left with the impression that you have even yourself admitted to that there's a little dichotomy. I don't want to call you a hypocrite. I know you don't like that word, you know.
Well, that is exactly correct, Phil. I don't like the word, and I've never considered myself to be a hypocrite. At worst, I think, as I've said to you, I don't mind being called a moral degenerate. I've engaged in acts with women 20 years my junior that would qualify me as a moral...
Well, I'm not interested in that. I mean, we keep drifting by. I'm interested in your philosophical consistency here when it comes to the privacy issue.
Well, and that is a good question, and I don't think I've got an answer for you. I can simply say that I've done the very best that I can, but I know that there's a lot more that I could do. A hypocrite? No, I am not. But that's why I leave these other descriptions. You understand what I'm saying?
In other words, you allow me to call you a moral degenerate and a moral and a, you know, whatever, reprehensible, but not a hypocrite.
Not a hypocrite, no. And the reason is because I'm honest with why I have split my philosophy into two parts, two conflicting parts that have nothing to do with each other.
All right, let me go to a phone call here. 877-876-PHIL is our number. On the line with me is Ken Kawa, C-O-W-A-A. And we're talking with him about Sixth Estate, which is his organization. This is Ian. Go ahead, Ian. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Ian.
Mr. Ian, I was wanted to ask this gentleman if he's ever had a man by the name of Morris Lawton.
Give me the name again.
Well, his name is Morris Lawton. He's got a organization in the UK. It's like, this is very similar. It's like a privacy issue.
I don't know, Mr. Lawton. I know of a couple of organizations in the United Kingdom.
Well, this is an organization in the UK that tries to protect the rights of people who are on Facebook or Twitter and so forth, right?
Right.
And so he was a man who was put in jail when they put him in jail because they found him to be a moral degenerate, right? Like you were saying, you call yourself a moral degenerate, right?
Yes, I do call myself a moral degenerate, but I've never done anything to be jailed for.
Right, well, I'm not sure if he had or not, but he said he believed in privacy rights, right? And they found him, he was a moral degenerate, right? Because he'd have it on with little boys, right? And he have it on with little girls and this kind of thing, right?
I will tell you right now, I've never done anything like that. If this is what my saying that I'm a moral degenerate is getting me, I will tell you that I have never, ever had any kind of encounter or interaction with children. And
all right, that's a crime, Ian, you know?
No, it's right, it's a crime that this man was involved in the UK. It's not, I'm not saying the man here, but I was wondering if he knew this man, of what you've done, you know?
No, I don't know the man. I've never heard of him. I understand there are organizations in the United Kingdom that are of similar charter.
You know, you've ever heard of Jack Longley?
No, sir, I've never heard of him.
But he's getting all little boys, right, and little girls. And sometimes, they found him with his mother, you know, and had sex with his own mother. He had sex with his own aunt, had sex with his grandmother. It's the worst kind of man. When you talk about moral degenerate.
Well, I don't know what you mean.
Well, you said that you don't mind being a moral degenerate. I think the caller wonders just how far you'll go.
long way, Ian. There's no question that what I've done with my life is probably a disgrace because I've said that I believe in privacy rights, you know.
Well, you say you believe in privacy rights, and I understand that, and that's good, and that's right. But if you believe in privacy rights, and you go and you use Facebook, right?
That's correct, yes.
And you use Facebook, you use Twitter, right?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Right, and you go and find a little boy, not a little boy, you're not finding a little boy, and then you find like a girl, right, and you have some kind of sex with her, some sort of degenerate sex, right?
Yes, that is correct. I do have degenerate sex, yes.
Right. And like, okay, so where do you stop, right? You're not going to stop in...
Well, I'm not going to do anything that's illegal, you see.
Right, but okay, you're not going to do anything that's illegal, right? But are you going to... What you got to do, right? If you're going to be married and you have, like, 100 girlfriends you meet on Facebook, even though you believe in privacy... You will put your name and your email address out on Facebook, right? On Twitter.
That's correct, yes.
And you're going to meet girls. They have sex with them and all this. And degenerate sex, like you say.
Well, I'm hard-pressed, Ian, to find out what is degenerate sex when it comes to a man and a woman. But, you know, there isn't much that men and women should be kept from doing together.
Right, but it's all except the backside, right? You're not going to do the backside, are you? You know.
All right, well, let's not get graphic here, okay?
Well, I'm not trying to be graphic. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't want to go into that. I will just say I've told you I'm a moral degenerate.
Right, well, because you're a moral degenerate, that's right, you're going to have sex with a girl, and you probably have sex with a backside, right?
Okay, we're done with that discussion. I think the answer to that question is probably yes.
Yes, that would be yes. In fact, I am such a moral degenerate, and
you almost call yourself a hypocrite right there, right?
No, I was not going to call myself a hypocrite, but I am such a moral degenerate when it comes to the kind of sex you just mentioned that I.
Did you have it with a man? You have it with another man?
I don't want to say.
That's a yes. That's a yes. Yeah.
All right, Ian. Thank you very much.
Right, that's a yes.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Ken. I don't know what the hell we proved by having him on. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
That's a yes.
Phil Hendry.
Well, a young man, he pressed me for it.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Alrighty, welcome here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and it's every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Thank God for the Internet, that's all I got to say. Thank God for the reach of the Internet. And it's a sizable reach, it's a significant reach. It keeps our company going, it keeps us able to pay salaries, it keeps us... seriously, it keeps our video casts going. It keeps all of the marvelous aspects of the Phil Hendry Show on top of things. And we also have an affiliation with some pretty good radio stations, such as WCFO in Atlanta and Rockford, Illinois, WNTA. I think we've plugged the hell out of WCFO in Atlanta, haven't we?
Yeah.
Well, okay. You know, I mean, we got more freak every other affiliate spotlight. It's WCFO in Atlanta. Thank you, great guys. But here on our radio show, we are also online at philhendryshow.com. And internet radio, by the way, you can buy those. You know that? You can buy individual internet radios. You can buy, they don't have to be connected to anything. Just as you pull the radio waves out of the air with your regular radio, you pull, using Wi-Fi, the internet from the air, and you listen to internet radio. And internet radio is being used by more and more people on the weekends. And they're plugging it into their home entertainment systems. And they're using internet radio, like if you were to use internet radio with the Phil Hendry Show, you would be able to plug that into your home entertainment system, and you'd listen to downloads of our podcasts for the week. You would listen to our different shows, our different podcasts. See? So that's one way of using internet radio. There's probably a million different ways, and I'm not saying this to undercut my good affiliates in the radio world. Far from it. I think you guys do a fantastic job. But you know, let's face the facts. Let's face the facts. You know, my radio show is a satire. It's a theatrical presentation. It's not Obama bashing morning, noon, and night until you're puking out of your nose and your mouth and your ears. You know, we're not on here every day finding out what else is wrong with America. We're not on here every day finding new ways to piss you off and bum you out. We're not on here every day trying to find new ways to make you worried and concerned about the future, you know, going into next week. We're not on here every day looking for new and different and colorful ways to tell you that Democrats are scumbags, Republicans are scumbags, conservatives are this, and the teabag is that, and the progressives are this, and Occupy Wall Street's that. We're not on here every day looking to make a mountain out of a molehill. We're not on here every day trying to turn a commie into a fascist and a fascist into a commie. We're not on here every day talking about how the Nazis are taking over, the commies are coming back, the Nazis are coming back, and the commies are taking over. In other words, we're not on here every day making up stuff. Not that kind of stuff. You know, I was always taught to be a responsible broadcaster. I was, seriously, when I came up in this business, they used to say, well, be responsible. Whatever you do, be responsible, Phil. Be responsible. Be responsible to your listeners. You can't be responsible for your listeners, but you can be responsible to them. And I've always treated my listeners as intelligent people. My listeners, I've always treated as intelligent people. And that's probably been one of my big mistakes. Because there's only so many intelligent people, right? However, I will continue to do that. But I was always told, be a responsible broadcaster. Well, I've never lived in a time with less responsible broadcasting than now. And rather than anybody doing anything about it, people just get pissed off at me for talking about it, right? Well, I ain't going to stop talking about it. You know, I'm not going to stop talking about it. I will continue to talk about it. Because if I don't, then I'm going to allow this whole vile system to just swallow up our little radio show here. We don't do political talk. I would rather blow my brains out on the air than do political talk. I tried it. I do it just about as well as anybody. But what are you going to do, man? When there's 9 million jackasses telling you how bad Obama is, you need one more? And, of course, if you say anything in defense of Obama, that makes you a bleeding heart liberal. You know, the talk radio landscape these days is so full of that kind of garbage. And people who are going to, you know, believe that kind of thing. Oh, this guy must be a liberal. I don't even want to go there. So we just ply our trade the way we do our thing, right? But more and more and more and more, the honest truth is radio. The way they've butchered radio beyond recognition, the way they've destroyed the talk radio format, there's hardly any room for a show like mine on radio. That's why, thank God, for the internet. And I know a million guys like me. I know a million guys making money, making good money, on the internet. We've had to. Because they have taken the radio industry and they have... I mean, if the radio industry were were one of those little cars in one of those monster truck rallies, I mean, it would just get flattened by that big, you know, the big wheeled internet truck going over the top of it. Yeah, they have just gutted it, man. They've gutted it like a fish. It's gone. It's dead. Now it's going to take forever to recover from this garbage, just utter garbage. That is being pitched on the radio. Political talk and conservative talk and liberal talk and Tea Party and progressive and Occupy Wall Street and stupid? Oh, my God. You weep when you think of how dumb half of these jackballs are that are on the air who are given a license to talk about this stuff. And I mean guys that supposedly have educations, guys that are supposedly smart. How does that one guy who does, you know, the guy out of New York, I'm not going to say who, who supposedly is so fantastically intelligent. I listened to this jackass talking a little bit about the founding of the country. He didn't have, I mean, if the guy got the dates right, it was a miracle. So, you know, and you look at these companies, and you look at these stations, the values of these stations continue to plummet through the floor. And I'm sitting here and I'm telling these imbeciles that own these radio stations why the value of their radio stations is plummeting, because all those guys know is the following thing. This is what they know. They know, well, the advertising just dried up. You want to know why the advertising dried up? Because there's no excitement for your radio station. You want to know why there's no excitement for your radio station? Nobody knows how to program it. Nobody has the guts to program it. Don't give me this stuff about how there's no excitement and the economy. Boy, I'll tell you, man, you guys with the economy. You, any guy that comes up to me and says, well, I'm having a hard time, I can't sell it because of the economy. You know what, Junior, go off and do something else for a living, man. Go, you know, go sell oranges at the foot of the freeway. So this is the deal, this is the deal, the hand we've been dealt. This is what the dealer has given us, folks, you know. But there is a blue sky out there, and there are brighter days ahead. That's why I say, you know, with the World Wide Web, my God, we've been given something that it's like manna from heaven, man. It's gold. There are millions and millions and millions of people out there on the internet, and they will download shows. They'll listen to them at their leisure. They'll listen to them live. They will they'll include them in with other shows. They create their own radio stations. And the beautiful thing about talk radio is we ain't going to get iPodded out of existence. Unlike music radio, you can't program a music station good enough that's going to beat somebody's own musical selection on their iPod. I mean, I love radio, man, but I tried the best I could. I tried to tell them.
Yeah, you said that thing about how they ought to invest in talent.
I gave an interview. Thank you, bud. I gave an interview with Radio Inc. 6 years ago. And I said in the interview, you have to begin to invest in talent, which is programming content. You have to begin to revitalize people's excitement in radio, because they're... It's going to die, man. What you guys are pitching right now is going to die. Oh, no. Well, you know, that's just some loudmouth. That's Henry again. There he goes again with his big mouth. There he goes again talking about, you know, talent. Well, of course he wants it to be about talent. That means he makes more money. And then I gave this interview with another guy. I'm just talking about interviews that I've given because, you know, I like to talk about myself.
That's okay.
Anyway... No, I gave an interview with our very good friend Ed Ryan over at Radio Inc. He's a great guy. And I said in the interview, he says, you're anti-corporate radio. I said, no, I'm not. Not at all. I love corporate radio. I've worked for corporations my whole life. I've worked for CBS. I've worked for Clear Channel. I've worked for Roundsville Radio, Susquehanna, Greater Media, you name it. Some of the best times of my life were with corporations, Cox Radio. I said, I'm not against corporations. I'm against individual laziness. That's what I'm against. And the individual laziness of this industry, that's what's brought it down. So, you know, like I said, I did what I could. I said what I could. I tried, you know, and they didn't want to listen to me. And then, oh, yeah, then I saw the letters. Somebody posted a comment. Did you see that, Robert?
Yeah, I've got told you about it.
Some guy from, he's a... I don't know what the hell this guy does. He's a Canadian talent agent, I guess. And out of everything that I said, this jackass said, oh, Mr. Henry's the kind of guy who wants to be chauffeured to his job every day. Could you imagine somebody that stupid? What I was talking about was that radio talent has to take over its own career. Radio talent has to take over their own shows, and we have to take over our own careers, and we have to begin to sell ourselves because the corporations are going away. That's all I said. And this guy said, Mr. Henry thinks he should be chauffeured to his job every day. I said, what an idiot.
That guy is a Canadian, though.
It doesn't make any... What, does that make him stupid?
That's what you said.
No, well, I... anyway, we'll be right back.
Don't tell people that.
World famous Phil Henry Show. We have a lot of news here, but let's just keep complaining about the industry. No, I'm kidding. Look at this. Herman Cain says he hasn't learned how to be politically correct after electrified border fence joke. I don't even know the joke, but it already sounds funny. Marines frustrated by a ban on memorial bracelets? And Ron Paul proposes $1 trillion cut in spending. It's all ahead here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Not the trillion-dollar cut in spending, but the story about it.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
All right, I'm just looking at this. I don't know what this means, but I'm just going to go ahead and take a shot, and I'm going to play it for you. Here is what was written down. CNN's John King says Herman Cain's remark about making a joke of a deadly electrified fence on the border, but he's running for president, and it's insensitive. Anybody know what that means?
Yeah, or John King.
John King what?
John King thinks it's insensitive.
No, he doesn't. It says here that CNN's John King says Herman Cain's remark about making a joke of a deadly electrified fence on the border, but he's running for president, and it's insensitive. What the hell is that supposed to mean?
I don't know.
There you go. Now, that's an honest answer. You don't know. Anyway, maybe if we listen to the comment, we'll find out. Here is Herman Cain.
Cain, you say your remark over the weekend about building a fence that would be electrified so that anyone trying to sneak across the border could be electrocuted. You say it was
electrocuted?
But you're running for president of the United States, not for court gesture. Do you agree at least that that's a pretty insensitive thing to say?
What the hell is that?
That's the question.
That's the question. All right. So I guess this is the answer.
Yeah, it was a joke, John. And yeah, I haven't learned how to be politically correct yet. So, yes, it probably wasn't the right thing to say. And I did not mean to offend anybody.
There's some terribly exciting audio. All right. Anyway, imagine there's no pizza. I couldn't if I tried. Eating only tacos or Kentucky Fried. Imagine only burgers. It's frightening. What the hell is this? Oh, man. Wow. It's getting worse. All right, let's just move on. I wish I could give you the Herman Cain story, folks. It's the most balled up. I'm not that interested, okay, to have to decipher and interpret the garbage that I got today on that. GOP presidential candidate Ron Paul unveiled plans to slash $1 trillion from the federal budget and cut the president's salary to about $40,000. The Texas congressman announced his plan to restore America at a news conference in Las Vegas ahead of Tuesday's presidential debate there. Paul, a longtime critic of federal spending not authorized by the Constitution, calls for eliminating the federal education, commerce, energy, interior, housing, and urban development departments. He also wants to abolish the Transportation Security Agency and corporate subsidies, plus eliminate all foreign aid and spending on wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Ron Paul's plan is the only one that seriously addresses the economic and budgetary problems of our nation faces. It cuts $1 trillion in 1 year and slashes regulations and taxes so our economy can grow and create jobs, said Jesse Benton, Paul's campaign manager and one of the aides who developed the plan. Now, let's look at this. And this isn't in grand specifics, but let's take a look, because there might be some areas here that I actually agree with. The congressman announced his plan to restore America at a news conference. Now, Ron Paul has raised a lot of money. He raised a lot of money in 2008. I don't know how much bread he's raising now, but he tends to raise a lot of money. So Ron Paul is a guy that I think we can all agree is not up against some monumental hurdle when it comes to financing his campaign, being visible, getting his message out to the American people, competing with the moneyed guys like Obama's got a lot of bread, Romney's got a lot of bread, and what's his face? Perry's got a lot of bread, okay? But Ron Paul does too. So you can't say that Ron Paul's message is getting buried. If it was about money, ladies and gentlemen, and if it in fact is about money, then it doesn't matter whether the television gets you on or not, or whether you're on, you know, whether your TV commercial is here or whether your campaign stop was covered there. If it's about money, it's about money. See, people, I work in the media, folks. I'm going to explain something that you're not going to believe. The media just isn't that smart, and the media just isn't that nefarious and that underhanded in that it plans and it plots out what it's going to keep from you and what it's going to report to you. The media, if it does keep anything from you, is not keeping things from you. The media has just decided not to report on something because they don't think it's interesting to you. The lady that called our show last night, I was shocked because I realized that a great many people really believe this horse dung about the media won't report it because the media's in bed with et cetera, and so on and so forth. The media, ladies and gentlemen, for the last time, the media will bend over and hand you the jar of Vaseline if there's money in it, viewers in it, and ratings in it. People crack me up. They think that it's all about controlling information because those who control the information, well, and then we can get Obama reelect or Romney, and oh, they just think there's all of that going on. Would you please wake up, people? Please, I don't give a damn what your friend told you or what some article said or what some guy in a newspaper inferred or what some other jackass on a radio show. These guys, I'm telling you right now, folks, I got no, as Dan Rather says, I ain't got no dog in this fight. I'm laying it out truthful as I can. And I'm coming from 30 plus years in the business. There is no large scale plan to manipulate or control information. The plan is this: make money. The plan is this: get viewers and listeners. The plan is this: keep going and make more money and get more viewers and listeners. The plan is advertisers. The plan, that's the plan. I got a laugh when I hear people talking about controlling. You want to know why people came up with that argument? Because it is a good one to have, because it explains the other horse dung that people believe. Really? Well, then why didn't this come out? And the answer is what? Because the media doesn't want you to know. Why does the media want me to know? Think about it. Rupert Murdoch. Oh, for God's sake. Think about it. Rupert Murdoch. Look, if you want to think about it, Rupert Murdoch, do you think that there's enough guys out there who got a real problem with Rupert Murdoch, and I mean competitors of his, people who want to run him out of business, and guys with some pretty serious money themselves, that if Rupert Murdoch doesn't want to report it, they will? And you think Rupert Murdoch isn't going to report it if it's going to cost him money, if it's going to cost him readers, if it's going to cost him viewers? That ain't going to happen either. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show with more on Rupert Murdoch. No, more on our News and Information Hour.
Phil Henry.
You almost blew it.
And gas projector guns.
It's definitely alien.
Go to wetanz.com. Check out all the District 9 items at wetanz.com. wetanz.com.
Listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Hardly. I ain't going to be here 6, 7, 8 more years, man, with any luck at all. 877-87. Well, I just gave out the number, but there's no point in giving a phone number out on this dog. I'm not kidding you. If I sound like I'm angry tonight, I'm extremely angry tonight. Pissed off. Pissed. Just. And I'm not pissed off about the direction of the country, because you know what? The country's going to do fine. If it can get rid of about a half a dozen of its worthless industries, the country's going to do fine. The problem with our country is that there are a high level of incompetent people running a lot of businesses. Okay? Other than that, we're doing great. Anyway, New York Assistant Attorney General quits after a New York Post story claiming that she was paid to be a dominatrix. The lawyer for a former New York Assistant Attorney General says her client could sue the AG's office for the New York Post, which published a story claiming she moonlighted as a dominatrix. Alicia Smith announced on Monday that she has quit her job and denied that she has ever paid for performing as a dominatrix at S&M parties, as the Post story had suggested, citing a fetish source. What do you want to do?
What?
This is all garbage. This is all crap. There's nothing here, man. There's nothing here. This is all crap. Every last story. There's no news here, man. This is just all fabricated. And you know, folks, this is not the media trying to control you. This is the media trying to give you what they think you want. Well, guess what? I only read what I want to read. I only read what's interesting to me. And if I got to read one more story, another sex scandal story, I mean, you know, there's better places to get sex. If you want to read about sex, enjoy sex, watch sex, hey, pay-per-view is a beautiful thing. Go to the TV and order up some adult movies, and you don't have to worry about whether there's a, you know, a dominatrix who is an AG or anything else. You can get the real thing. So we don't need to read the stories because, I mean, that's why we're reading the stories. Getting back to Ron Paul, you know, and really what we were talking about is a discussion of media. When you hear people talking about Ron Paul, 9 times out of 10, if he's a Ron Paul supporter, will say the following thing. The media doesn't cover him because he's saying a lot of dangerous things. The media doesn't cover him because he's not interesting. The media doesn't cover him because nobody's going to vote for him. So the media doesn't cover him because if they did, people would turn their TV sets off. Do you understand? It's got nothing to do with whether they want to control Ron Paul's message. They don't give a damn about Ron Paul's message. As far as they're concerned, as far as I'm concerned, Ron Paul ain't got a message because no one's interested in him. If he had a message, people would listen to it and people would be, you know, gathering around him by the millions, not just, you know, his hardcore advocates and fans and people that raise the money with their money bombs, but actual voters. And as you know, as well as I know, he doesn't have any voters. That's why the media doesn't cover him. If he did, they would, because that means there would be people viewing their channel. That's what controls the media in America. Now, you may not like Rupert Murdoch because he's got a right-wing channel. You may not like Ted Turner because he's got left-wing leanings. You may not like this guy. You may not like that guy. And you may hate them so much for their political views that you want to demonize them. Demonizing them these days means that they are controlling things, you know, from behind the curtain, that they are like the Grand Oz, that they are pushing the buttons and pulling the levers and controlling something larger than themselves. And they're doing that because they have an agenda. There's a lot of people with a lot of money. And there's a lot of people that want to get a lot of messages out there with their money. But if their message is not interesting, if their message is not one that that people want to listen to, if their message isn't something that people are hearkening to, then it doesn't make any difference, folks, how much money they've got. Rupert Murdoch is successful because he has enterprises that people are patronizing, whether it's news or whatever the hell that guy does. People like what Rupert Murdoch is selling. Bottom line. And to an extent, the same thing with Ted Turner or whoever is running CNN these days. I don't know. So that's all there is to that. And there is no media control from the standpoint of message. And when that lady called yesterday was talking to us about, you know, it's the media doesn't want. Do you understand what's going on? The media doesn't want you to know. Lady, I work in the media. There's nothing you're doing at Occupy Wall Street that I don't know about. Ain't nothing you're doing in your little demonstrations in New York or in Australia, wherever the hell it is that I don't know anything about. I know about all of it. I know exactly what's going on. I know who's there. I know who ain't there. I know when the cops were deployed, when they're not, where you are. At all times, I know. Why? I'm the media. I have to know that. And with the right information, I can rally my listeners, and they will listen to me. But if it isn't anything that's very interesting, no, we're not going to talk about it. That's not the media saying that we don't want people to know. That's the media saying we don't want to bore people to death with your horse dung. I don't want to bore anybody with you and your dumbass demonstration unless there's something that's going on that's interesting. Now, what do you think got coverage? You talk about the media doesn't want you to know. Really? I thought the media did a pretty good job of covering those cops beating everybody up on the bridge. Was that something the media didn't want us to know, or the media did want us to know that? Well, if the media did want us to know about police violence and police brutality, then why wouldn't the media want us to know what's behind that police violence and police brutality? Why wouldn't the media want us to know about the power structure that's behind all of that? They showed us the cops. They don't want to show us the... Oh, no, they don't want to show you that, but they will show you that. Do you understand the tortured thinking and really, at the end of the day, the self-delusion that goes into having some of these philosophies that people have? It's amazing, and you really have to do a number on yourself. You really got to twist yourself around to get to believe some of the stuff that these people believe. Yeah, but you see, that didn't happen because this, but there isn't anything that's consistent. There's nothing that really does. When they say connect the dots, these jackasses have to connect the dots like Federal Express. You know, everything has to go through Memphis. Do you know that, bud?
Uh-uh.
I don't know if they do it now, but everything that you... If I want to send a package to San Francisco from L.A., it's got to fly through Memphis.
What? Yeah, I heard that, too. I saw that on that one movie, Cast Off or whatever.
Castaway.
Yeah, Castaway. That movie was bitching. What are you talking about?
I'm telling you. That movie was... It was. Remember that movie? It was Tom Hanks as a...
He's Federal Express.
Right. He was a Federal Express guy. And he lived in Memphis. And it showed his life, you know. And there he is in Moscow. And he's teaching the new Moscow people. They're going to put together a new Federal Express office in Moscow. And then he's got to go back. And he's flying here. And he's flying there. And he's, for whatever reason, he was flying over the South Pacific. And his plane crashes, blah, blah, blah. But everything goes through Memphis. Well, that's the same way that these jackballs think. These people that are all about, the media doesn't want you to know. And these people that are all about, it's psychops. And these clowns, they're connecting the dots by way of Memphis. There's a couple of things you got to have if you're one of these clods. You got to have lots of emotional energy. You've got to be able to really just scream and yell. And everything has to be like a panic. Everyone, you got to be right on the edge. And it's too late to talk sensibly about anything. You have to be in a panic, and you have to be freaking out about things, and you have to... forget it, man. I can't even talk to you about it, man, because it's too late now, man. Don't you understand, man? Don't you see what... That's what... You have to get to that level so there isn't any intelligent conversation. Like this stupid bastard that called my show one night, he says to me, when George Bush became president, what happened to, what was the amount of money? What happened to the something billions of dollars that it was in the Defense Department and suddenly it was gone? It was gone. Where did it go? Now, this jackass was talking to me 7-8 years after the fact. 8 years. What happened to the money? He didn't work. I don't know what happened to the money. I mean, if I told, and I did eventually tell him what happened to the money, although he'd hung up because he couldn't take, actually listening to what happened to the money. That's not the point. The point is he just threw that little hand grenade and then he ran off to his troll hut. Right? Well, what happened was it was an accounting error. It was an accounting error. Now, this guy can't tell you what happened to that money. I just told you what happened to that money. It was an accounting error. Well, he doesn't want to believe that. Why? Because it's the government, George Bush, Bill Clinton, Blackwater. You know, you can line up all of these boogeymen, and that's why they're not telling us the truth. They took that money. What did they do with it? Who knows? I know. They probably gave it to some right-wing organization or to the government of Iraq or, you know, then comes the fantasy. Then comes all of the things they just make up. Well, if you hear enough of this stuff long enough, man, what do you think happens? You start repeating it yourself. And that's what that lady did last night on our show. She starts repeating. This is a normal, sounded like a pretty intelligent lady, wouldn't you say?
I don't know, man. She sounded on me like she, maybe, but then she started saying all the goofy stuff.
Well, that's what I mean. She sounded like she was pretty intelligent. And then she goes, yeah, but the media doesn't want us to know. Don't ever call my show and tell me what the media wants or doesn't want. You're talking to a member of the media. And I see how it works every day. And I saw how it worked every day. For every day of my life, for decades, I've seen how the media works. Every day of my life, I've listened to and I've talked with the managers and the vice presidents and the owners and the programmers, and I know exactly what motivates them. I know exactly what it is that motivates these people. It's not mysterious, and it's going to disappoint you greatly, and it has nothing to do with politics. It has nothing to do with a political philosophy. It has to do with money. In other words, what motivates them, and I say this with all due respect, what motivates them is the same thing that motivates you out there listening to me right now. Money. Where to make it, how to make more of it, when to make more of it, when to take a vacation from making more of it, where the best money is, where the worst money is, where the, you know, how to get money on credit, how to get the green stuff, where to buy the gold stuff. Money, money, money. Why? Because that's what facilitates our journey to being able to contemplate happiness and allowing ourselves the time to achieve happiness. Money buys you that time, and it buys you that freedom. And that's where that's at. So I hope that I've cleared things up.
Yeah, but, you know, you should tell people money's the root of evil and everything. Yeah.
Why? Why should I say that?
Well, I mean, because the people that you say the money... And everyone's going to go out and make money, but that's the root of all evil.
Who says it's the root of all evil? What do you mean money's the root of all evil? What a stupid thing to say.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so. Money is... The root of all evil is ignorance. Ignorance, ignorance, ignorance. That's the root of all evil. Willful ignorance. The root of all evil. It's not money. My God, the good that money has done, we can't even begin to think it. We can't begin to quantify the good that money has done, the lives that money has saved, the societies and the cities and the countries that money has built, the freedom that money has afforded some people. The reason why people say money is the root of all evil, and I say this with all due respect, that's said by people that don't have any money. And rather than look at themselves in the mirror and say, I don't have any money, I don't have the means by which I would like to do some things, but I don't have those means. But you know what? I don't want to feel bad about myself, so I'll just come up with the money is the root of all evil. That's the same thinking that says that Hitler was a genius. Of course he wasn't a genius. He was an imbecile. He was a blithering idiot. But you make yourself feel better when you say he's a genius, because that way you don't come off as gutless. Because if we said that he was an idiot and people say, well, then why didn't you deal with him? We'd have to say, well, because we were gutless, because we were frightened of him, because we didn't want to do anything right away. We were scared to death of this imbecile. Ha, 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 stupid you. Yes, you're right. So instead, we made him a genius. Well, the same thing with money. If you say that money is not the root of all evil, that money is just money, and you say, well, then why don't you have any? It's because I guess I'm not ambitious enough or I don't know how to go out and get money. Ha, 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 dumb you. Well... It's not dumb you. It's a tool. The root of evil has always been the same root. Ignorance. Blind, stupid ignorance. Willful ignorance. The kind of ignorance that kills people. The kind of ignorance that holds the world back. The kind of ignorance that holds societies back. The kind of stupidity that wastes time, that wastes money, that wastes resources. You know, that's what I'm talking about. All right, we'll be right back. You guys are just staring at me.
Yeah, I don't know if you're talking about me.
No, I'm not talking about you. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
And it's a bitch. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We want to thank our guest, Ken Kawa, tonight, as he talked about some drivel. I forget what it was.
Well, he's talking about Facebook.
Oh, yeah, Facebook, yeah. And Margaret Gray, who was discussing a woman who keeps people prisoner in the basement of her house doing that because, as a woman, society has been cruel to her, and she needs to find a way to make a living. And who knows, she may have 10 kids and a husband that ran out on her. So the best thing to do is to keep mentally disabled people prisoner in a cellar so that she can use their Social Security checks so that she can have a better, more fruitful life.
Do you believe that?
What?
Did you believe that?
No, I didn't believe it. You got to get closer to the mic. No, I didn't believe it. Of course I didn't believe it. But it made for a very interesting segment, I'll tell you that, or not. Myron Miller and his wife Arlene, they'd been asleep for an hour when their 15-year-old daughter woke them up and said that people were knocking at the door. Mr. Miller is 45 years of age, a stocky construction worker, and an Amish bishop in the peaceful farmlands of eastern Ohio. He found five or six men waiting. Some grabbed him and wrestled him outside as others hacked at his long black beard with scissors, clipping off 6 inches. As Mr. Miller kept struggling, his wife screamed to the children to call 911, and the attackers fled. For an Amish man, it was an unthinkable personal violation, and all the more bewildering because those accused in the attack are other Amish. We don't necessarily fight, but it's just instinct to defend yourself, Mr. Miller recalled. That's a pretty honest way of putting it, isn't it? We don't necessarily fight. We are peaceful people, but hey, it's instinct to defend yourself. The attackers, the authorities said, had traveled from an isolated splinter settlement near Bergholt, south of the Miller residence. This is in Ohio, according to sheriffs and Amish leaders in the region, home to one of the country's largest concentrations of Amish, and they'd come to expect trouble from the Bergholt's group. Yes, it's said to be led with an iron hand by Sam Mullet, a prickly 66-year-old pain in the ass who'd become bitterly estranged from mainstream Amish communities and had several confrontations with the Jefferson County Sheriff because he's just a pain in the ass and he wants to marry little girls. Probably, I don't know.
Is that it?
No, I'm just kidding. But why do I want to believe? Well, naturally, if you're sending guys out to just personally violate somebody, you know, and it's not like rape, but they're cutting the guy's beard off. It's the guy's religion, so that's like a personal violation. If you're doing that, if you're sending people out to do that kind of stuff, of course you're some jackass. Some new pain in the ass we got to deal with. These religious people, and every time we have, as I've said, every time we have a period where things are a little unsettled, people are a little nervous, people are a little worried, people are this, people are that, out come the religious nuts. I didn't say religious people. Religious people are one thing. The religious nuts, though, you love them. But the violent humiliation that men from his group are charged with inflicting on their perceived enemies throughout this fall using scissors and battery-operated clippers came as a bizarre shock. The assaults, four are known to the authority. I'll give you an example of what a violation it is. It's a violation the Hasidic Jewish men wear their hair and their beards a certain way. It would be equally a violation, personal violation of their religious mores and their person if you went up to them and started cutting their hair off, you know. The assaults are known, four are known to the authorities, have stirred fear among the Amish and resulted in the arrest so far of five men, including three of Mr. Mullet's sons. Mullet. On kidnapping and other charges. Officials say that more arrests are possible. In the first incident, September the 6th, in the town of Mesopotamia, a married couple who had left the Bergholtz community 4 years ago, Martin and Barbara Miller, were attacked at night by five other men. So, in other words, these guys were, these people were living in a town called Mesopotamia? The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Phil Hendry and Dan Northcraft, Chris Johnson, and Fred Scotty. Don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. See you tonight on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.